purpose for this talk is to let you know the why of being an effective top. So you can get any amount of technique off of XTube or off of any other places, off of Wikipedia or whatever. You can get all sorts of wonderful, this is how to enslave a boy or how to, you know, flog somebody or how to whatever. I mean, I learned how to swim in an attractive way from a book, and I learned how to rollerblade from a book. It would have been a lot nicer and a lot quicker if I'd had somebody actually show me and say, actually, you're leaning too far forward or you're not leaning far enough. I had to learn the hard way, you know, and it was a real bitch. And that's the way, unfortunately, most people have to deal with things, is on their own and not very happy about it. There's just not enough mentors to go around. What I'm constantly haranguing people about, I've given my How to Be an Effective talk probably at least 12 or 13 times in public. And what people are always disappointed by, they want me to teach them, you know, cock techniques or butt techniques or whatever. That comes later. The most important thing about being a sir is understanding the philosophy behind it. Now, I'm going to preface what I'm saying. The problem with being a top is that with so few mentors around, it is very difficult to know when you're okay, when you're at your best, when you've completed your cycle of becoming, you know, a wildly successful and popular and well-esteemed top. You know, a sir in the community is a wonderful thing, but how the fuck do you get there? Well, first you have to understand that every single one of us, and I'm going to stand by this, but even the most esteemed, the most highly regarded, the most amazing top there is always insecure about himself. It's just like the process of life. You learn and you become wiser. And that, yes, I've got a lot of experience. I really do. But I'm constantly having to learn and grow and change and adapt to how things change in my life, just like anybody else. It's the path to wisdom. See, if I'm heading up the path to wisdom, I'm never really going to get to wisdom because, you know, hey, we all die before that happens. But it's the process that matters. That somebody like you, who is learning and growing and figuring things out, you're not that bit different from me, even though I've got decades of experience ahead of you. Because things that I'm having to learn now didn't exist when I was younger. I mean, we had nothing to do with sounds, or really all that much latex, or puppy play, or furries, or, you know, all these other things that have been showing up since. And there's a lot of things that I've just simply, you know, had to buckle down and learn. So we're all in a growth process. The things that I do know, though, I will gladly share. For instance, it's okay not to know. See, people are really worried. Oh my God, I how can I ever start? I'm way behind other people. Well, we're all in some version of that ourselves. We're all struggling in our own different ways. Yes, I'm a cocky son of a bitch. Yes, when I speak in public, people go dead silent because they want to hear what I have to say. My goal is to have you get to that point. The reason why I do this is because for us to have a happy culture, we have to have cocky tops. But technique alone is not enough to make you cocky, not enough to give you that swagger where you know that you're fine and that you know exactly how to thrill them. In order to do that, somebody who cares about you has to say, this is what works in my personal style. See, if you talk to 800 different tops and say, what is the best way to do things? You're going to get 800 different answers. So I'm prefacing this with me explaining that I am just like anybody else. I have my opinions. But the things that I'll be talking about are little wisdom pellets that I'm emitting that will possibly, some of them may actually be good for you. And if not, that's wonderful. I'm okay with that. I'm not committed to trying to drill everything into your brain. But anything that I can offer in the way of coping mechanisms or success techniques or anything like that, you're very welcome to. So the reason why this is important is because in order for us to have a culture that is thriving, where people want to show that they're part of a tribe, where they want to gear up, where they want to identify themselves as part of a thriving, joyful, affectionate tribe, there has to be a payoff. And in order for that payoff to happen, we have to have cocky tops, and we have to have really thrilled boys, submissives, slaves, subs, whatever the hell you want to call them. It all has to be part of the same thing. We're all part of a larger culture. We're all part of a tribe if we just acknowledge that. If I'm only out for my own selfish needs, there's not a lot of difference between me and a sociopath. The reason why I am wholly biased towards being a cultural top, being part of a tribe, being a man of the community, is because, let's say somebody is a sociopath. They operate under the cover of darkness. You know, they'll put somebody in the hospital for 3 weeks. Ho, 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 I got away with that. He never figured out what my real name was. They exist. People like that do exist. So how have we always, as a tribe, as a Leatherman's community, gotten past that? Because people like that have always been around. The way we get around that is by having connections with other people in the tribe where it's all esteem-based, where we are operating in broad daylight, where what we do is visible so that people can judge us accurately, where they get real information from their friends saying, oh, you really want to deal with him. He's the best. You want to go have some of that. Tear off a piece and tell me about it. Yum. Well, it would be really nice to be in that position, wouldn't it? And in order to get to that place, you have to be a good man. Capital G, capital M. You can't just be somebody who wants to bang on people just because, you know, hey, it's something to do. See, my bias, again, you have to understand where I'm coming from. I am approval-based. I am not disapproval-based. Somebody who wants to get into a scene with me where I call him horrible names and punish him terribly for every little infraction is going to be terribly disappointed with me because I grew up with that. And at some point, I made a decision inside me that's rock solid that I will not do that. That I am approval-based, that I'm being the good dad. I'm being the affectionate and, you know, encouraging top. I'm being the guy who helps them reach the heights. I'm not being the guy that shuts them down. I know that makes people's dicks hard to be abused. There are people out there that are really looking for that. I'm not that guy. So my bias is as one who is sensitive, observant, smart, and I give a damn about the result rather than just my orgasm. That I'm much more interested in the play process. The orgasm is nice, but it's not my goal. My goal is to make this a transformational experience each and every time. My goal when I'm playing with someone for the very first time is to establish trust and then get them to the point within a very short time where they're so happy that they can't wait for the next time. Where 40 years from now, we're going to high-five each other because, hey, wasn't that great that first time we played? It's an awesome sort of responsibility, isn't it? Seems like it'd be really a lot of work and a lot of trouble or whatever. No, it's not. Because a good man keeps his word by promising somebody that this is what I'm committed to, that this is how I will treat you, that this is what you can respect and expect and understand about everything that I do. By keeping your word, you are respected. And other people will say very good things about you, and you'll get laid a lot, and you'll be secure in your community. You'll be part of a tribe. We've had millions and millions of years of evolution to get us to this point where we need to know that there are people that we can esteem, that esteem us, where we're part of something larger than ourselves, larger than our considerations and our petty little worries. That we can be part of something where people say, oh, he's a great guy. God damn, it's nice to see you. You know, that whole Cheers thing on TV where Norm comes in, Norm! Because everybody's so happy to see him. It is our birthright to be that Norm, to be the guy that people say, oh, thank God he's here. This is wonderful. Now we're going to have a good time. The problem is, what we're struggling against are some negative aspects. One, there's not enough mentors to go around. A lot of us died. Those who didn't tended to disappear. Two, as I always say, the internet is making us socially retarded. We tend to lose social graces when we spend all of our time texting and emailing and not seeing each other face to face and being able to use our bullshit detectors to tell when something's not quite right, when we're grindering each other too much. But also, with so many distractions in our world, we tend to fall apart. We don't tend to clump. Here in San Diego, we've been able to clump, and very effectively, and very joyfully. Matter of fact, on April the 20th, I'm going to be giving my next talk over in Palm Springs. I'll be recording that as well, where I talk about this kind of stuff. But where I'm going with this is that if you set it as a goal that you will be a well-esteemed man in the community, where the people in your local tribe will gladly refer you, saying, oh, you want to talk to this guy, as opposed to stay the fuck away from him. You know, it's that simple. That having that as a goal is going to make you a lot more confident in yourself, because when people are handing in happy reviews, you're getting the external validation that you need. Okay, so that was the background. Now let's talk about specifics. My understanding of your personal nature, Jay, is that you are sensitive, you're observant, you care. These are all incredible assets. The stereotype of the stern, unrelenting, sadistic top is very true. It's true for me as well. I have that side of me. I call it allowing the beast to walk the streets. There's a lot of that in me. And I'm also kind and caring and observant, and I'm dedicated to a wonderful result if I'm playing with somebody. So in order to get to that, first I have to know what my strengths are. Okay? I know that I'm a hell of a good party starter. That's me, personally. I can't say this for anybody else, but for me personally, I'm a really good Julie the Cruise director. That's my nature. Not everybody has that kind of wiring. That's okay. Nobody has to pretend to be me to be successful. But you do have to give a damn about the other person. Just using somebody up like toilet paper and throwing them off to the side, it's what dogs do. And see, that's what anybody, any male can do. You know, that's what we're hardwired for. If I am going to be successful, then I have to take care of several things. So let's go down the list. One, I have to get their conscious mind to shut the fuck up. See, in the absence of information, when things go quiet, our brain goes into hyperactivity, our logical brain. It says, uh-oh, what if he doesn't like my dick? Uh-oh, what if he thinks I'm too fat? Uh-oh, what if I'm too hairy? Uh-oh, what if, what if, what if? And there's nothing to shrivel the dick like those kind of thoughts. So what I do is I recognize that the conscious mind is not very fun. It's just not. So I go around it. What I want to get to is the animal brain, the unevolved portion of the brain. I want to get right to the subconscious. So believe it or not, the way that I do that is using words. So if I'm talking to somebody and I'm seducing them, and it's the first time that we're playing, I actually communicate with them on multiple levels. I'll be using words of reassurance where I'll say, you know, I really, really, really like the way that you're built. I wouldn't change a thing about you. And I only say it if I mean it. You have to be authentic. You really do. Or I'm saying, I like it when you do this. I'm using positive reinforcement to the logical portion of the brain. I'm distracting it away from what is really going on, which is while I'm doing that, I'm caressing, I'm tickling, I'm touching, I'm testing. I'm seeing what works. I'm seeing where the buttons are for that particular individual because everybody is wired differently. Some people, their nipples are wired directly to their dick. Other people, they couldn't be bothered. Some people are very butt-oriented. Some people are not. You have to find out. Some people are very ticklish. Some people are not. Some people are very ticklish, but they can turn it off instantly. But what you do is you find out where their special zones are. What are the things that get them going? Where their buttons are. And once you know where they are, your job is to push them and push them hard. But in order to get to that, in order to get them to start reacting, we have to train them to react. See, there's nothing more boring for a kinky top than somebody at some bottom who just lays there like a dead fish or goes real stoic where every muscle goes tense and like, oh, fucker, you're not going to break me. Well, those can be fun challenge. That's a more advanced topic. But for the vast majority of tops, if we don't get reactions, we get bored. We get caught up in our own considerations. Maybe he's not liking this. Maybe I'm abusing him and he hates me. You know, who knows? What the hell's in our mind? What I do is I constantly check in when I'm playing with somebody for the first time. One of my common things that I will do, and this is stepping into the realm of technique, but let's say that I'm flogging somebody for the first time. And I'll start flogging them. I'll start them out soft, and then I'll get a little bit firmer, and then I'll come up to them, and I'll touch them, and I'll check in with them, and I'll say, on a scale of 0 to 10, with 10 being absolutely intolerable, where are we now? And they'll say 2, or 7, or 5, or whatever. So for them, each person has different limits. But in order to find out what those are, we have to get the information. Okay, again, I'm now sidebarring into technique. After I've played with somebody, the most important thing to do is say, before you sleep tonight, I want a full email from you where you describe what happened during this play session as if I was not there. Make no assumptions about what I know. When you write it out, tell me what you liked, what you didn't like, and everything in sequence and how much you liked it. The reason why that's important, one, you're testing to see if you want to see if they are looking to come back. Two, you want to see how well they follow orders about, you know, doing an email. And three, you get real information from them, which is so important. It is a gift from heaven when you get feedback. It's really important. Because the way we become wiser as tops is when we know how we've done. If we just play with somebody and then that's it, there's nothing to learn from it except our guessing. And guessing is a fucked up way to learn. You need pure information. You need real information. It's really crucial. Because the way that we become wise is to process after every session without exception, and understand how can I have made that better. It's really important. And to accept the good news when it shows up. Rather than say, yeah, what did I do wrong? Don't focus like that. Just allow all the information to come. Because if we're going to get better and be wise when we get older, where everybody just, oh, I am not worthy. You know, I get that all the time. And frankly, it's not a good motivator for me. You know, people saying, oh, that's him. Well, who gives a fuck? I'm just a guy, you know. But where I'm going with this is that the reason why people are giving this reaction is because I have proven that I'm the real deal. Not that I'm perfect. I've never once pretended to be Mr. Perfection. People accept me this way, flaws and all, because what I bring to the party is that I'm gladly, gladly sharing what I know and gladly, gladly teaching newbies. That is a goal for later on. Right now, you're not at that point yet. But when time goes by, have that as a goal, to be a grandpa for the community, because we need those too. We want these younger guys to know that they have a future to look forward to, where people are like really glad that you're around. That's the opposite of the usual thing for older gay males, which is, oh, he's such a troll. Get him away from me. Ew. You know, he has no value. Well, we do have value. where I'm teaching you is to get to that point. Moving on. When I'm playing with somebody for the very first time, it is really important for me to establish trust with a capital T. Because nothing else matters, really. If you're dedicated to being a really good top, the trust has to go in both directions. Not just so that, you know, the bottom will be able to, you know, fear the mighty top less, which is always a good idea, but far more important that the top can trust that the bottom is not going to sabotage him in some way or torpedo him in some way, which can happen. It's very easy for a bottom to tell all of his friends, stay away from him. No doesn't mean no. He's a bad top. And suddenly you're not getting laid anymore because this little pissy little thing, for his own reasons, decides to, you know, harm your reputation. Because people will always believe that that big, you know, brawny top, you know, is an abuser. I mean, it's the default position. Of course he is. Well, yeah. You know, we're always suspect. So we have to know that there's going to be a flow happening between us, which is the goal, to build a power flow of joy, because phase one is establishing trust. Phase two and phase three tend to blend together, which is finding the buttons, like I said, finding out what turns them on, finding out what is most pleasing and doing it. And also training. Training is really important. And the training goes in both directions. I'll talk more about training in a moment. But the fourth phase has to do with ecstasy, not the drug, the real thing. Because if someone finally has the freedom and the trust and the happiness and the experience of being absolutely deeply into bottom space, where they're so deeply into being a bottom that they can't even articulate words, where the top is so endorphinated from what he's doing and so happy, and just like it's a beautiful flow that happens between them, and that's how it works when it works well. So that is what I call the anti-drug. Because people who take recreational drugs are trying to shortcut past their fears, their considerations, their loneliness, their breakdowns, their history, all that other stuff, and just try and get to the ecstasy right away. The problem is that it harms them in the process. What I'm advocating has nothing to do with drugs. It has to do with true connection, true intimacy, true and deep and abiding trust. Having a wonderful power flow that is based upon how we are wired as primates, to be able to have a beautiful, beautiful experience and to be animals about it. Because we spend all of our days being creatures of logic. And we get tired of it. I mean, I could tell you so many stories of, you know, high-end corporate executives who are in charge of thousands and thousands of people, and all they want to do is just submit at the end of the day. Because they need that pendulum to swing hard in the opposite direction. In order to do that, we have to train them. See, a lot of guys have natural talent as far as being bottoms. God bless them. Thank goodness for that. That's a wonderful thing. But there's a lot of things that they need to learn, such as how to give good feedback. So how do we do that? Well, in my particular case, if I'm playing with somebody for the first time, then I will say, I really like your reactions when you do this. Thank you for being so fully self-expressed, because it helps me to understand how you're doing. Yes, those are very formal terms that I'm using, but it's clear. That way, I'm building up a positive reinforcement loop. So I'll give an example of a negative reinforcement loop. Say, no, stupid, the other way. Okay, we've all dealt with that at some point in our lives. It's not a good thing. It's a very, very bad thing. The reason why is because there's no real information conveyed except, I don't like you. Versus if I'm communicating to this person that I'm playing with for the first time, you're doing right. Keep doing that thing. In fact, please give me more of that. Then it allows them to cut loose, because the thing that's holding them back is in their logical brain. It's saying, I should be tough. I should be butch. This is leather. It's kinky. I should be tough. I should be a man. Well, sometimes what we need is somebody who's going, you know, make it wiggling and making noise. And if I don't want them to wiggle and make noise, there are ball gags and there are restraints. But for the first time, I need to know more. I really do. I need information because people are so wildly different. So like, for instance, I have a slave named Bob, and he is what some heterosexual guy called limbic. He reacts strongly to everything from the lightest, gentlest touches, where he practically goes into skin-gasms, to the hardest of the hardcore play. It's a lot of fun to play with. After I play with them in public, other tops come up to me and say, where do I get me one of those? Because that feedback is juicy to us. It's wonderful. That if I don't want it, I know how to get rid of it. But for the first few times, it's really important because, see, the bottoms actually train the tops. This is important. Okay, people will tell you this, that, you know, supposedly the tops isn't running the show. It's the bottom. Because if the bottom's not happy, then basically the scene is no fun for anybody. Okay, if the bottom is done, then we need to respect that. That's why we have things such as safe words. Green, yellow, red. Red means stop right the fuck now. We're done. Okay? You don't want that reaction. Yellow means, I don't want to stop, but I just need a little breather. I'm a little overwhelmed. Green means, sir, could you please quit talking? I want more. Could we get going? But the reason for this is because the bottom is training the top to suit his needs better. The top needs that information badly. Because each person is different. Each person's needs are different. Well, we can't be Mr. Perfection. One size does not fit all in this particular case. Okay. So, if all you want to do is have a dungeon and somebody arrives and you scare the hell out of them and you beat the hell out of them, you force them to come on command, you know, that's fine. That is good. My bias in this thing that I'm talking about has to do with investing in somebody. There's not a lot of conversation about that. You know, the stereotype is, be like a porn video. Well, the porn video doesn't show you anything to do with the two guys that are going to be playing in the porn video having lunch together and laughing and talking and establishing trust. Doesn't show the long, exhaustive douching process. Doesn't show any of the seduction stuff that the top may use in order to, you know, establish some kind of fun trust with the bottom. Doesn't show the bottom practicing for an hour and a half with dildos of varying sizes until he can finally take that monster. Doesn't show any of the aftercare. Doesn't show any of the checking in, are you okay? Doesn't show the, damn, I gotta pee, you know, break time. Doesn't show them laughing and giggling like little girls, except in the behind-the-scenes stuff that some of the porn stuff does, where they show them afterwards showering and laughing and giggling and pinching each other's asses and flopping their dick from side to side in synchronicity, whatever. It's nice that that happens, but in real life, life is not a porn video. We need to be able to invest in each other. We're not robots. We have to have a sense of trust and commonality. We have to. We're primates. It's what we need. And so then when I teach new tops that it's really important to start with a cuddle, they look at me in shock, like, really? I've never heard that. But it's really, really important. It's crucial that it helps break down the walls. It helps break down the fear. It helps break down the history that we brought with us from being beaten as a child. It helps get us to a good level where we can start with some fun. Cuddling is so important, and it's communicating on a deep and tactile level. And the reason why caressing is important and praise is important, and it should never be fake praise. Never disrespect somebody by not giving authentic praise. If something's not so for you, don't say it. But find something to praise and praise it. It's really important. It is charming. It is affectionate. It's authentic. It's not the armor-plated leather man stereotype. And it helps get past the fears. because we all have them about each other, top or bottom. You know, I mean, I've had guys go south on me where suddenly in the middle of play, they just withdraw into themselves, or somebody who want to punch me, or who wants to get the hell away from me as soon as possible, or start crying. These are all normal fight or flight responses. Somebody going south, disappearing from me, saying, nope, I'm not going to say anything anymore. Not even using those words, but just kind of going in the fetal position. That's because my play with him is causing him to remember something from his youth, from his bad old days. How I deal with that speaks for my character. If I say, ew, what did I just step in? Get away from me. Then it means that I'm not a caring person. But if I take the time to say, okay, I can see what's happening. Why don't you come on over here? We're going to go into cuddle mode for a little bit. And I hold him close and I say, your feelings are valid. What you're going through is important. Go ahead and have those feelings. You won't be any safer ever in your whole life than you are right now. And he might cry and he might, you know, have some real strong reactions. But then he'll never have them again. That's the thing I've noticed, is that when someone has catharsis, emotional release, because after he's gotten a lot of it out of his system, I will then take him and I will flog him or I will spank him or I will do whatever it is that triggered him. And it'll be a glorious experience as opposed to something where like he's going, uh-oh. It's really important that we leave the space available for them to have those feelings and get them out of the way forever. Because that is the role that many tops have to play. We have to be the good dad, the forgiving dad, the accepting dad, when so many people don't have that in their lives from their own genetic father. So that when I am treating somebody as someone who is praiseworthy, someone who is matching up to my expectations and exceeding them, that is like gold to many, many, many gay men. Oh my God, they're finally getting the approval that they have needed so strongly for so long. As I said, there are people who are exactly wanting the opposite. For instance, somebody who got beaten a lot as a child, well, that was the only attention they ever got, so they want more of that. They're not sure what to do with anything else. That's fine, but that's not my scene. To reiterate, the intention that I always have the first time that I play with somebody, whether publicly in a bar or privately in bed or in a dungeon or anything like that, is to actually get to know that person on some level. If I wanted to just beat on something, I could do that to a brick wall. The intention that I have whenever I'm playing with somebody, it's as an investment in getting to know that person, because what if that person turns out to be a huge value in my life? I want to be available for that. I want to be available for that possibility. So what we're doing right now, I just had my slave lay down face down naked on the bed, and I've got my young, hunky trainee that is learning how to be an effective top. And I'm going to teach him about my slave's particular inclination. He has very strong reactions to things, especially gentle touch. Matter of fact, he's having those skingasms right now. And one heterosexual male said, observing this, said, oh, he's limbic, L-I-M-B-I-C. I don't know how accurate that is, but it's as good a term as any. That it means that he is just as sensitive to the very gentle touch as he is to the hardcore play. And I know this because I've played with him many, many times. He's been my slave for over 2 years now. And he's been training me to be a master. Now, that's an odd thing to say, and I said it intentionally. Because in his particular case, his needs are different from many people's. So he has been training me through his feedback on how to be better at what I do. Through his feedback, through his requests, through his fantasies that he sends me. I'm learning all about this stuff. That, you know, decades after I first started doing this stuff, I'm still learning. He's the first slave I've ever had. And I'll tell you right now, I am so suited to be a master. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's making lots of little noises as we very gently touch him. Especially right, see if just go right along here on the other side. Yeah, just right along here. But yeah, there you go. Okay, the intention here is to get them all whipped up and excited and endorphinated. And we're doing that. It's very easy with the slave. Very, very easy indeed. So I don't know how much more of this I'm going to be recording because I'm going to get right to the fun. But the intention is, again, you want to play with somebody who's willing to give lots and lots of feedback. That's nice, juicy, nutritious feedback for tops because all of us need to grow and learn. So encouraging feedback is very crucial. Yeah. Okay, so this is the explanation about flogging. Let's give them a break for a second. Yeah, we're getting a lot of gasping on the soundtrack here. So this is introduction to flogging, the why. The why of flogging. Okay. One of the most misunderstood things in the kinky scene in terms of the general public is flogging. Because we have the stereotypical pirate movie type scene. Keep it quiet, boy. The pirate movie scene where, you know, beat 'em bloody, you know, 40 lashes, tie 'em to the mast. You know, or snuff porn like The Passion of the Christ, where there's damage, you know, and harm and blood and skin hanging off of you and all that other stereotypical stuff. What we have instead is an intention to get the boy endorphinated. Endorphins are the natural brain chemistry. They're in the same category as, say, heroin or whatever. They touch the same parts of the brain. But it's a natural high. There's no downside to it. You don't become addicted to it. You don't, you know, there's no crash. There's only good affiliated with endorphins. The way that we do that is we cause a conflict between two major portions of the brain. The logical portion of the brain and what we call the lizard brain, the unevolved deep down portion of the brain that controls your heart rate, controls your breathing, that sort of stuff. So that if I am causing a conflict between those two portions of the brain, then it starts squirting out endorphins. So like, for instance, if I start pounding on somebody's back, then that person logically may think, oh, that's not so bad. I could fall asleep with somebody doing that to me. That's their logical side of their brain. But deep down, as I'm, you know, hitting on their back, their subconscious is saying, holy shit, fight or flight, fight or flight, and starts squirting out the endorphins like a faucet. And that's a desirable result. So that if I'm taking the time to flog somebody for the first time, again, I reassure them beforehand. I tell them certain things. I say, this is just what I do. Everybody's got their style. But I will say things like, you have my word, and that's a very powerful thing to say, you have my word that I would rather underdo it than overdo it, since this is your first time. Because they're always worried. You know, I'm a big, strong guy. I'm scary, you know. And what if I, you know, beat them bloody and, you know, leave them off by the side of the road, you know, to be picked up by some nice person and taken to the hospital? So what I'm doing instead is I tell them, you can count on me. You can depend on the result. You know from watching me with other people here at this party that I actually do care. And I'm going to care about you. I'm letting them know in various ways. I use different phrases, but always in very strong definitive terms, in very declarative statements. I'm not trying to push them around. I'm not trying to be bossy. I'm using strength instead of force. There's a difference. Okay? So that if I've reassured them, and say, they'll come up to me after I've flogged four or five other guys, and they'll come up and say, I think I'm ready to try it for the first time. I say, I would be honored. And you can depend on it turning out to be really nice. I'll actually leaving you wanting more. You have my word on that. And they'll always say, oh, but be careful, be careful. You know, like they're different from anybody else. Everybody's afraid. And so then that's fine. And so then what I'll do, like I said, is that I'll talk to them, and while I'm talking to them, I'm caressing them, because it's hard to bullshit somebody when you're touching them. If I'm standing 4 feet away with my arms crossed and talking at them, it's an entirely different communication than speaking quietly into their ear from behind and gently caressing their flesh. What I like to do when I'm flogging somebody for the first time, even in a public space, is I'll have them remove their shirt, and I will have them drop their pants a little bit. One, it's nice to be able to not hit their belt, but far more important, everybody likes looking at somebody's ass, you know? It's nice, you know? And so then this man is submitting to me, man or woman. I've actually been flogging several women lately, but that's another story entirely. The slave is perking up his ears wanting to hear more about that. But anyways, what I do is that I will gently start flogging them in a circular motion, and then I'll, you know, there's no power involved. See, I'm going to have to do this next portion as a video at some point. I'm going to be teaching this stuff and video to capturing it. So that's coming up. Right now I'm talking philosophy behind it. But then I build them up, and then I check in on them, see how they're doing, using the technique I talked about before, saying on a 0 to 10 scale, you know, tell me how you are. And then I'll do it some more based on their feedback. But I never take them higher than about a 7. The reason why is because the first time, they're really getting a lot rearranged in their brain. They're now assimilating the idea that, one, this is not only not abusive, but two, it's kind of cool. And three, you know, I actually could use more of this at some point. And so that the idea is to get them so excited and so endorphinated and so happy after I'm done, after I've gotten them up to about level 7, then I say, turn around and hold me. Now, one, I've said it in a very stern and very, declarative statement, in an imperative tone, and they turn around and they clamp onto me. It's really important to have that happen. If I flog somebody for the first time and then I thrust them away from me and say, that's enough of you, who's next? It breaks the contract between you, that this is about trust, that this is wonderfulness, that this is us sharing with each other. If I am going to be an ethical and respectable top, it's really important to me to do aftercare. Even if there's 18 people in line, it doesn't matter. We're going to take at least a few minutes of me telling them, giving them the report card, as I call it, telling them how they did, telling them what I liked about it. Never any bad feedback. Never use bad feedback. Say, next time I'd like you to do this more. That's the only thing that I will do. I do not say, man, you're really fucked up. Because what we're doing has had incredible power. Has huge, 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 I call it a force multiplier. That the power that I have over somebody in circumstances like that is huge and mighty, and I cannot use it against them. Because that's going to give me a bad reputation, one. And two, it's just not a good way to live. You know, always use positive feedback, saying, I really liked the feedback you gave me. I noticed that you put a lot of your stress into your upper back muscles. And a lot of people do that. And it's one way for you to show me in a dark and noisy bar how well you're doing, you know, and it's good feedback. Thank you. Whatever. Whatever is so for that person. But then you say, 20 minutes from now, I want you to check in with me. When they do, I say, I notice that the muscles in your face are all slack. And are the problems of the world bothering you right now? Oh, no. I say, well, you're going to sleep really well tonight. You know, right now you are sailing. You are soaring along on the glorious clouds of endorphins. And you have a free gift certificate anytime you want to do that again. Now, these are things that I say, and I mean them. I would never say them unless I meant them. I'm not that kind of guy. But the reason why it's important to say it is because it's all something that makes them want to wag their tails and tell the world what a great guy you are. That's all a way of establishing commonality with a fellow human being where everybody gets their goodies and everybody wins. And there's not enough of that in our larger culture. And so we're able to get that because, as gay men, we know how to attract people. You know, we have to in order to get laid. But see, what I'm teaching is how to keep people, not just in your social circle, not just, you know, as your little butt slaves, but as people who are part of a larger community that shares information with each other, that we do refer to each other constantly. I'm going to talk about Venn diagrams for a moment. Venn diagrams is where you take two circles and you overlap them slightly. You've all seen it. that, think of those as two social circles, so that you may tell somebody about me, and that person is also part of a different social circle, and they tell their friends, and it's all one big frothing mass of different social circles in our local community. Here in San Diego, we've got a very active local community, so we're sharing packets of information between social circles often. And that's how your reputation builds as being somebody that people want to learn. And the more experience you have, the more eager bottoms come up to you, the more they're going to want to build you up as being somebody who stands out from the crowd. Because there's no lack of people who are just don't care. They can't imagine why they would even begin to care about anybody else, why they would want to invest in a boy and have that boy be in their collar for the next 5 years or 15 years or 2 years or 3 months or whatever it is, because if all they're looking for is just to get their own nut off, you know, anybody can do that. But if you want to be a guy that other people esteem, where you know deep down to your bones just exactly what you're worth, without any bullshit, that you know that you have value, that you're somebody that pleases other people because you're just that kind of guy, in the process it pleases you too. And it's this wonderful feedback flow that's just incredible. So there undoubtedly will be more, but I'm going to just go ahead and play now.